We welcome you to the Christian Ministries Church podcast. We believe God has a message for you today that will encourage and speak truth to your heart and life. Let's join Pastor Melanie Bertolio as she shares the word with us today.
All right, y'all, I was having church in my office down there before I got up here. I don't know. I believe y'all came with me. I believe we've already just experienced the Lord tonight. But I think He's got a word for us, and He's going to teach it to us through the life of Sarah. And I specifically asked Pastor when we started talking about this series if I could do some of the women of the Bible, because I'm that, you know, I'm not a man hater, and I'm not someone with something to prove. I'm really not, but I don't think we oftentimes give some credit to these women that God gives to them. I mean, really, if you think about it, God gives credit to these women through His Word. We know this because Sarah doesn't just sit in Genesis. We hear about her later on, and there's a reason for that. So we're going to talk about Sarah tonight. Sarah's the wife of Sarai, or as Adam and I just listened to the pronunciation of it. And if one can roll the tongue, which I cannot do, it's supposed to be like Sarai, Sarai. Yeah, I'll be saying Sarai. That's the same person, just so you know. All right. She is the wife of Abram, who became Abraham. Sarai becomes Sarah, and we'll learn about that. That's a pretty, pretty awesome thing. We're going to talk about the changing of her name and what that really meant. But we're starting in Genesis 11. If you want to turn to Genesis 11, you want to pull it up on your phone, whatever you happen to be doing. But Genesis chapter 11, and we're going to start in verse 27. And it says this, this is the account of Terah's family. Terah was the father of Abram, Nahor, and Haran. And Haran was the father of Lot. Now, you all recognize the name Lot. Lot is Abram's nephew. He comes to live with Abram, and there's, you know, we've got some stories that he's involved in. But it says, but Haran died in Ur of the Chaldeans, the land of his birth, while his father Terah was still living. And meanwhile, Abram and Nahor both married. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai, and the name of Nahor's wife was Milcah. Milcah and her sister Iscah were daughters of Nahor's brother Haran. But Sarai was unable to become pregnant and had no children. One day, Terah took his son Abram, his daughter-in-law Sarai, his son Abram's wife, and his grandson Lot, his son Haran's child, and moved away from Ur of the Chaldeans. He was headed for the land of Canaan, but they stopped at Haran and settled there. Terah lived for 205 years and died while still in Haran. All right, so the first time we hear anything about Sarai, we are learning that she is Abram's wife. All right. It is estimated that she was somewhere around 60 years old when she and Abram married. Now, that sounds really old for getting married, but don't forget these people lived to be very, very old. You saw the chart that Pastor had last week. Some of them lived a really, really, really long time. And so for someone getting married in their 60s was like someone getting married in their 20s right now in terms of lifespan. And so Sarai was around 60 years old when they got married, and her name, Sarai, means this, contentious. Contentious. The definition of the word contentious means causing or likely to cause an argument. Now, wouldn't you love for that to be your name? I mean, aren't they setting you up for failure by giving you that name at birth? When I get to heaven, I'm going to ask God about these names because, you know, when you name them certain things at birth, you kind of just set them up for that. And sometimes it's a great thing and sometimes it's not. But so Sarai's name means contentious. in Genesis 12, and we're not gonna read Sarai's whole story because it spans several chapters. But in Genesis 12, God calls Abram and Sarai to leave behind everything they've known and to go to the land that God's promised to give them. A land flowing with milk and honey. And milk and honey is a good thing. So God's calling them to something. He's calling them away from what they've known. And just so you know, when it says that Sarai is from Ur of the Chaldeans, okay, that's Babylonian. What does Babylon represent in the Bible? It always represents the world. All right, so think that through. Abram and Sarai are being called out of the world. All right. And they're being called into this land that God has promised them. And so they pack everything up and they begin to head that direction. Now, it's important to note this, that the call on Abraham's life at this point is the same exact call that's on your life and my life, to come up out of the world. Why? So that God can bless us. I mean, that was the whole point of it. Hey, come away from this, because this doesn't bless you, to this that I have created just for you so that it can bless you. And that's the same call that is on my life and on your life. And so they travel to Canaan, where God promises to make Abram into a great nation and to bless all the families of the earth because of him. Now, when they get there, it's not long after they're there, and there comes a drought, and they leave, and they go to Egypt. Let me just tell you, God didn't tell them to go to Egypt. They just went. Well, what happens when they get in Egypt? They get themselves in some trouble. They do some silly things. You can read all about it. That's not what we're going to cover tonight. But when we kind of get outside the scope of God's plan for our life, silly things happen. Sometimes scary things happen. Sometimes dangerous things, you know, but they had to experience that. And so then they go back to the land God promised them. And God reiterates in chapter 13 his promise to them. Now, in that same chapter, Abram and Lot part ways, okay? And then Abram has to go save Lot. Not, this isn't Sodom and Gomorrah yet, but he has to go save him from some people that are trying to attack him. And Abram has to put together an army of people and fight a war on Lot's behalf, which he does, and he wins because he has God on his side. And then a little bit later on, we learn that God tells Abram again, I'm going to bless you. You're going to have a son. In chapter 15, he says, you're going to have a son and countless descendants. And God confirms the covenant that he's going to give him the promised land at that point in time. Well, here's the deal. We've already read that Sarai couldn't have kids. And yet, God is saying to her and to Abram, you're going to have a child. So, Sarai is, I want to point this out to you. If you read chapters 13 through 15, Sarai's not mentioned. Okay, keep that in mind. Except that she's totally mentioned in chapters 13 through 15. And here's what I mean by that. Abram and Sarai are married. They are one flesh. Okay, you think about that. The promise that God made to Abram to give him a son, he made to Sarai. The promise that God made to Abram to make him the father of many nations and to bless all the families on the earth because of him, he also made to Sarai. And she is the mother, right? All right? So she is, I mean, if you're married, you know what I'm talking about. Nobody does anything alone when you're married to someone. If it weren't for Sarai keeping the home fires burning they were wealthy, wealthy people. And while he did have staff to help him run his estate, there was still a lot involved that Sarai had to manage and keep going so that Abram could go out and do all the things that he's doing. And so we know this. Sarai had to be on board with the plan. Why do we know this? Because a house divided against itself can't stand. So Sarai was on page with Abram and the call on Abram's life. And she had to recognize that that call was also on her life, because who would want to just wander around in the wilderness and be nomads? They were nomads for a season of time. And so she loved her husband. She was faithful to her husband, loyal to her husband. And she understood that she was vital to everything that Abram was doing and was going to do. We know how important she was in Abraham's life and in the plan of God. And one of the ways that we know is because she just played a starring role in trying to mess up the whole thing. And she had to be important if she could do something that could mess it all up, right? Now, she didn't mess it all up, but she made her best effort. She decided to create a plan B for God. I feel like if I looked back on my life, I could probably see a number of times when I came up with a plan B for God. You know, God, your way isn't really working for me here. And I don't like shutting my mouth when I want to open it. And so I'm going to go ahead and open it right now. This will be plan B. I can't say to you that one time ever it's worked. But that's what we do. That's our humanity coming out. And we think we're going to help God along. And Sarah came up with a plan B. The problem is that God only has plan A. God only has a plan A. You might say, well, yeah, but God planned for the world to be wonderful and sin came into it. It did, but he knew that was going to happen all along. Nothing surprised him. And he already had the out for mankind. That was already in the works from the beginning of time. He knew what was going to happen. So he only has a plan A. All right? And so no matter what our stupid, dumb decisions are, what our better ideas are, we can't thwart the ultimate plan of God. You just can't. His plan will be carried through. His plan will be the plan that ultimately the whole world will get to know and get to see come to fruition. So the promise, the plan of God, that has been given to them is dependent upon them receiving a promised son. So Sarai gets frustrated and tired of waiting, and who can really blame her? Because even though their ages were different than ours, I still think when you hit, I don't know, 70, 80 years old, you're probably going, oh, I don't know about this. And it tells us that she was past the point of childbearing. So she comes up with plan B. She gives her maidservant to her husband and says, have a child with her and this will be the child. But that changes Hagar's attitude. Hagar's the maidservant, changes Hagar's attitude towards Sarai, and Hagar becomes really pompous and arrogant and thinks that she runs the show now. And so Sarah gets upset and mistreats her and is pretty cruel and harsh to her. She runs off, then she comes back, and a lot of stuff goes on. Here's what I can tell you. God, she has this child, Ishmael, and God doesn't accept that son, Ishmael, because he's not the promised son. God had a plan. And so Sarah's failed attempt to expedite God's plan doesn't thwart or change God's plan. So God continues to confirm his covenant with Abram in chapter 17. But he does something different this time. And this is the part that I love. He changes Abram's name to Abraham. And he changes Sarai's name to Sarah. Sarai was contentious. Sarai was prone to start an argument. Now you just think about the people you know who are prone to start arguments. Are they the kind of people that you see being blessed? Are they the people that you want to hang out with? Are they the people that have good fruit in their lives? Not in my opinion, but her name got changed. And when her name got changed, everything changed. Sarai means contentious. Sarah means woman of high rank. Someone who the Bible says would give birth to kings. It also means noble, a noble woman. Some, you'll read a lot where it means princess, but really ultimately it means someone of high rank or a noble woman. All right, so Sarai gets her name changed. What does that do to Sarai? It changes something in her, right? And after this change takes place in her, she gets pregnant. And she gets pregnant with the son that God has promised to him. She has the son, and they name him Isaac. One day, she sees Ishmael teasing Isaac, and she asks her husband to send him away. And so he asks God if he should do that. God said yes, and so he does. Okay? So Sarah raises Isaac, and then she dies. That's in that story of most of our lives, eventually. You raise your children, then you die. But eventually. Hopefully you raise your children, then you get to spend decades with your grandchildren and great-grandchildren, and then you die. So she raises Isaac, and then she dies before he even gets married. But we know this. God blessed all the families of the earth through Isaac. God did what he said he would do. Abraham became the father of many nations, and his descendants have been countless. Now, there are a lot of lessons we can learn from Sarah, and this is why we can learn lessons from Sarah, and this is what I love about God, because he is so practical. We can learn lessons from Sarah because she's just normal. She's just ordinary. There was nothing about her that made her special in any way when God gave the promise. She was faithful and loving to her husband, but she was also jealous and vindictive. She followed God, but she sometimes got ahead of God. She was a mama bear. I know some of you women out there, you can relate to that one. There's no question about it. She was a mama bear. I mean, the minute she sees Ishmael teasing her boy, she was done with that boy. She got rid of him. She was a mama bear when it came to her kid. But she was honored by God in spite of her imperfections. That's what I love about Sarah. God honored her. She was very flawed. And we get the privilege to see her flaws, and we get the privilege of seeing her great qualities. And God was able to use her in spite of all of that. And the other thing that I love about Sarah is that she had a sense of humor. And we know this because we learn about when she laughs. See, Sarah, now, some people don't know this, but Sarah and Abraham laughed when they were each told that she was going to have a baby when she was well past childbearing age. But it was on different occasions. But Sarah was hiding, and she heard the prophecy that she was going to give birth in her old age. She was 89 when that happened, I believe. Okay, so she hears it, and she's hiding. She's eavesdropping is what she's doing. But when she hears it, she laughs. And I have to tell you, I can really relate to this one in a way that is even just beyond, that's funny. I had a similar experience. I've told you all that Rick and I, we had a lot of trouble getting pregnant. And Shelby was born a week before our 9th anniversary. So we were pushing a decade of marriage before children even were in our lives. And so I praise God for God answering our prayer in Shelby. But God gave us some bonus answers to prayer a couple years later. And I just want to share this because I understand Sarah. So Rick and I, first of all, I'm going to try to tell this story fast, but I want you to have some context. So after Shelby was born, you know, I was 32 when Shelby was born, and then that was in 2000. Well, then in 2001, 9/11 happens, and I kind of got in a little bit of fear over 9/11. And before 9/11, I really wanted to have more kids. And Rick was like, you know, if we'd have been able to have him younger, I'd say yes. But, you know, I just think we're kind of getting up there. And I really wanted more until 9/11. Then I was like, okay, the world is just not what I thought it was. And I just really got in some fear. And I was like, he's probably right. That's just the way it needs to be. So about 13 months after we have Shelby, Rick's sister, Bobby, has a baby. And when she has Jack, Shelby was kind of sick. She had stuffy nose and all this kind of stuff. So we didn't get to go see him in the hospital, and we got to go see them. He was born right at the end of December, and it was probably about 10 days into January or so when we got to go see him for the first time at home. And so we go. Well, Jack was a preemie, and so he's the only baby I've ever known about that got to come home before he was 5 pounds, because he was not quite 5 pounds when he came home, and he had the little light that he had to lay under all the time. So he just looked like he was about this big and just so fragile. And so we go in with our now 13-month-old that we're just hoisting around, and, you know, here she is. She's, by that time, she's, you know, she's rough and tumble, and we can deal with her. Well, we go into Bobby's house, and we see Jack, and we visit for a while, and then we go back out in the car, our little family of three, and we get in the car, and Rick says, oh, I got to tell you, after seeing, you forget what they're like when they're newborn and how fragile they are, and I got to tell you, I'm just glad we've decided. We've got Shelby where I'm not scared of her anymore. I am so glad we've made this decision. And the whole time he starts talking, I start going, and I'm calculating days, and I'm starting to kind of feel warm inside and getting hot, and I'm like, what? You know? And so I say nothing to Rick while he talks all the way home about how glad he is that we're not having any more children. And I get home and I sneak into the bathroom. And you know, you're not supposed to take those tests at night. You're supposed to take them first thing in the morning. But I decided it's got to happen. So I take it. Didn't even have an inkling before that night. And it says yes. And then I sit there and I go, yeah, but you're not supposed to take them at night. You're not supposed to take him at night. You're not supposed to take him at night. I'll take it in the morning. So I take it in the morning, and and here they are, sitting back there on the back row. But that's not the funniest part. That's not when I laughed. I wasn't laughing then. I was not laughing then. But let it set in. I mean, and we became thrilled very quickly. Almost overnight. I mean, it was just, you know, how can you not be? I mean, children are a gift. So we were so excited. And so when we were, you know, they usually, I don't know when they do it now, but they used to do ultrasounds about 16 to 18 weeks in or something like that. Well, our doctor, we kept getting ours put off. And so I was about 22 and a half weeks along before I went and had an ultrasound. And so, we go in for the ultrasound. It's the only visit Rick went with me on with both babies. Okay, go with the ultrasound. We'll see what we're having. It's going to be so precious. And so we go in, and he's holding Shelby, and they put that little thing on my belly, and immediately two babies pop up just like this on the screen. But they were just exactly like that. And so in my mind, I just went, well, it must be like a mirror imaging thing. I didn't even really panic, and he thought the same thing. And so the woman says to me, she says, now you've had an ultrasound before now, right? And I said, oh yes, I have. I had one when I was pregnant with her. And she was like, but you've had one with this pregnancy, right? And I said, no. And she looked at Rick and she goes, sir, you should probably sit down. And he sat down and she said, you're having twins. And I looked at Rick and I started laughing. And it wasn't that, it was not normal laughing. It was that, I mean, I just couldn't believe it, and I could not stop laughing. And so she said, would you like to know what you're having? And we said, yes. And she said, you're having two boys. And so then I just laughed some more. I know what Sarah felt like in that moment. It's just this thing in you can't believe. So I have great compassion over Sarah because I have been there, but it also gives me great peace because she's just like me. And when I hear that she heard that news and she thought, no, no way. And yet, God did exactly what he said he would do. So in Genesis 21, it says this in verse 1. The Lord kept his word and did for Sarah exactly what he had promised. She became pregnant and she gave birth to a son for Abraham in his old age. This happened at just the time God had said it would, and Abraham named their son Isaac. 8 days after Isaac was born, Abraham circumcised him as God had commanded. Abraham was 100 years old when Isaac was born, and Sarah declared, God has brought me laughter. All who hear about this will laugh with me. Who would have said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse a baby? Yet I have given Abraham a son in his old age. And Isaac's name means laughter. And when I hear that, here's what I know. God doesn't need my perfection. He can take my brokenness. He can take my normalness or my ordinariness, if you will, and he can use it and he can fulfill his plan in me. And if I just will have the faith for it. In Hebrews 11:11, it says, it was by faith that even Sarah was able to have a child, though she was barren and was too old. She was barren and too old. She believed that God would keep his promise. And so a whole nation came from this one man who was as good as dead. A nation with so many people that like the stars in the sky and the sand on the seashore, there's no way to count them. That's pretty awesome. In Galatians 4, verse 21, now keep in mind what I said earlier. Here's how we know that Sarah was a woman of faith. Her story takes place in Genesis, and there are multiple references to her in the New Testament, and that means that we're to look to her and to emulate the faith that she had. And in Galatians 4, verse 21, it says, tell me, you who want to live under the law, do you know what the law actually says? The scriptures say that Abraham had two sons, one from his slave wife and one from his freeborn wife. The son of the slave wife was born in a human attempt to bring about the fulfillment of God's promise. But the son of the freeborn wife was born as God's own fulfillment of his promise. These two women serve as an illustration of God's two covenants. The first woman, Hagar, represents Mount Sinai, where people received the law that enslaved them. And now Jerusalem is just like Mount Sinai in Arabia because she and her children live in slavery to the law. But the other woman, you know, the ordinary one who just had faith to believe that God would do what he said he would do, Sarah represents the heavenly Jerusalem. She's the free woman, and she is our mother. As Isaiah said, rejoice, O childless woman, you who have never given birth. Break into a joyful shout, you who have never been in labor. We are children of Sarah, and we are free because of that. It says, for the desolate woman now has more children than the woman who lives with her husband. And you, dear brothers and sisters, are children of the promise, just like Isaac. You are now being persecuted by those who want you to keep the law, but just as Ishmael, the child born by human effort, persecuted Isaac, the child born by the power of the Spirit. But what do the scriptures say about that? Get rid of the slave and her son, for the son of the slave woman will not share the inheritance with the free woman's son. So, dear brothers and sisters, we are not children of the slave woman. We are children of the free woman. I've got 5 minutes that I want to give you two perspectives you can have on Sarah's faith. Number one, Sarah's lack of faith brought destruction and death. Her lack of faith brought destruction and death, and the ripple effect is still being experienced by the world today. Sarah's solution to her problem outside of God's plan caused more problems for her, but it also caused more problems for everyone around her. Ishmael's birth represents a natural birth, being born in the natural way. But Isaac's birth was miraculous. That's the point of it all. It was a supernatural birth. And we get a picture of our first birth in Ishmael, and we get a picture of being born again in Isaac. And every one of us have been born an Ishmael, but we can be supernaturally born an Isaac. That's pretty cool. So when we get out of step with God, what we've got to remember is it doesn't just affect us. All right. So the first perspective on Sarah's faith is this, that your lack of faith will bring destruction and death, and the ripple effect will radiate out from you and affect all the people around you, and perhaps for generations to come. But here's the good news. The second perspective on Sarah's faith is this. Sarah's faith, her actual faith, brought health and life, freedom and redemption. Isaac's birth, miraculous, supernatural, and represents being born again. And the ripple effect of that faith is also still radiating out from her. And so you say, well, okay, you've not really told us what to do. Here's what I'm telling you. She was out of faith. And yes, it had its effect, and it still is, that we can't get rid of the consequences of our actions. Okay, there are always consequences to our actions, and there are still consequences that we are living out because of Sarah's lack of faith. But all she had to do, all she had to do was quit contending with God. And the moment she quit contending with God, you know, God says, if they're not against me, they're for me. So when she quit contending with God, that put her on God's side. And when she got on God's side, she became a woman who was noble and of high rank. And it changed the way she thought. It changed the way she acted. I think about when I was trying to get pregnant with Shelby. I was living a very ungodly life for the first several years that I was trying to get pregnant with Shelby. But, you know, there was a moment in time when I stopped and I said, God, I've got to give all of this to you, and I'm not going to live that way anymore. And I began to seek after the Lord. And I went from being Sarai to being Sarah. I quit contending with God and quit arguing with God and reasoning with God. And I gave my life to God. I was saved, but I gave my life to God. And when I gave myself to Him, I left the Ur of the Chaldeans and I entered into the promised land, and I began living in a way that God could bless. And that's all it takes. You can walk in this building tonight a Sarai, and you can leave a Sarah. It's all up to you. It's a wonderful, wonderful story, but it's a real true story. It's not made up. It's not a fairy tale. And it can work for you just like it worked for Sarah. All you've got to do is quit contending with God and allow Him to raise you up, make you a person of noble character that He can bless.
Thank you for being part of our podcast today. You'll find more online messages from Christian Ministries Church, as well as location information on our website at cmchurch.net. There's a place for you at Christian Ministries Church, where it's more than a church, it's family.